You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Tuesday the 19th of March, Cool Grey here in TW11 today. And I thought I'd start this show by redressing the balance somewhat. Yes, we know that a lot of the criticism aimed at Cheltenham last week was with some justification, and I'm sure it will be taken on board. But I received this email from Andy Harnett, and Andy writes as follows. I've just listened to your podcast of yesterday where you and Dave Yates discussed the issues re Cheltenham. I thought I'd give you my views. I've been going to the festival for years, but for the first time only went for 2 days this year, Tuesday and Wednesday. My wife and I were members for many years, but gave up our membership and restricted ourselves to 2 days as it was just becoming too busy. This year was great. Walking around was just so much easier, nothing like the jostling and bustling of recent years. We had little problem viewing the paddock and winners enclosure from the first floor terrace. Buying a Guinness in the Guinness bar was simple, with superb service from very attentive youngsters wanting to help. Drinking the Guinness was much more pleasant, as again, there weren't the numbers of people pushing and shoving you as they tried to find their friends or make their way to the bar. I even found the Cheltenham staff much more friendly this year. I agree, still rather too many petty rules, but I wondered if they were more amenable as they weren't quite so busy. I'll certainly go back next year. I agree the preponderance of short price Irish favourites in the main races in small fields wasn't exciting, but that's due to reduced numbers. If the Jockey Club racecourses and the media see the issue as pushing for more racegoers, I think they're asking the wrong question. I would make each day ticket only for all areas except Best Mate and the market the fact that the numbers are restricted to give everyone a perfect experience. I'm not sure I expect Jockey Club racecourses to do that. Finally, I think the pricing of tickets and food and drink is about right and very comparable to what we pay at Lords or Wimbledon, which are similar status events, in my humble opinion, just my meandering thoughts. Andy, well meandered. Andy Harnett there with an alternative perspective on the Cheltenham Festival. But we must press on, because that in the rearview mirror and now looking ahead. And yesterday was the first day of the flat turf season in Ireland. And it was a big day as well. There was a group race. There was the Irish Lincolnshire. There was a pretty heavy presence from Aidan O'Brien. Rishi Persad joins me this morning. Rishi, what did we learn from the Curragh yesterday?
We learned that although we've moved on from the jump season, there are still one or two jumps trainers in Ireland who are still playing a role. I mean, yes, Aidan O'Brien was the dominant figure because he won one of the feature races, the Park Express Stakes, with a very well-bred three-year-old filly in Brilliant. But there were wins for Noel Mead, who trained a very smart first-time winner in Money Dancer. Colin Keane was aboard her. And later in the day, there was actually quite a nice winner for Martin Brazel in the last race. So yes, there are still a couple of jumps trainers still putting their hat in the ring. But Aidan O'Brien actually gave a really interesting interview to Gary O'Brien, sort of laying out plans for some of his stars for the season, Nick. One of those stars that he spoke about, we were expecting to see Opera Singer in the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket, but he suggests that she has just not quite been right, maybe a couple of weeks behind. So he said it's more, his quote was, more unlikely than likely that she makes the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket. And it seems as if it's possible she'll start her campaign in the 1,000 guineas in Ireland at the Curragh. But he had better news of City of Troy, who he said everything's gone to plan and is about to take over the world.
All righty. Well, with Opera Singer out likely of the 1,000 guineas, probably going to find sooner or later that Fallen Angel is challenging for favouritism. Opera Singer's stablemate Ylang Ylang is still favourite in most lists, but Fallen Angel was very impressive at the back end of last year. She won the Moygled Stud Stakes at the Curragh in impressive fashion, and that was her final run, which was always the intention. She runs for Steve Parkin's Clipper Logistics, and she's trained by Carl Burke. Carl's daughter and assistant Kelly is with me now, having seen Fallen Angel working in Midland this morning. Kelly, how's she getting on?
Yeah, we're delighted with her. She's really wintered well. She looks fantastic, grown and filled out, and she's doing everything right at the moment.
Because seeing her as a two-year-old, she was already, you know, imposing enough. She already had some height, but I guess you want to see that the heft to go with the height, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. You know, she was not a light framed horse, but she definitely wasn't a heavy framed filly. So she's definitely done well. Went back to Branton Court at Steve Parkin's house, and you know, she's done great for that break. And then we've had her brought in nice and early, and she's just picked up in her work nice and slowly, and she's done really well.
And that's the interesting thing, isn't it? When the Guineas is furthest from our minds, you've already got to be well advanced on the way there because, you know, cold though it might be, these fillies have got to be absolutely at their peak the first weekend in May. Does that pose its own sort of unique set of challenges?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy for the fillies, especially with the North Yorkshire weather. We've had quite a wet and windy winter, but she's handled that well. She came in looking good. Her coat's brilliant. So, yeah, we're really happy with the way she looks. And it's just nice to have them in early, and then at least you can do a steady build up. And then if there is any setbacks, you've got a bit of time and a bit of leeway. As far as I know, I don't think she goes for any prep race, so she'll probably just have a race course gallop and then we'll go from there.
And is she straightforward to train?
Yeah. She's quite a sassy filly. You know, she's there, but like a lot of the good ones, they're not always the quietest. But, you know, she's pretty straightforward. She likes her work and, you know, she goes about it in good fashion. And, you know, she always tries. She's not lazy. She does her work nicely and enjoys it. She's been so far been pretty straightforward.
Kelly Burke, daughter and assistant to trainer Carl, with news of Fallen Angel, who has been left with a rather easier task than otherwise might have been the case with the likely defection of opera singer from the 1,000 Guineas. Okay, let's talk about Aidan O'Brien's jockey arrangements. Yesterday we underlined the news that had been broken in the Sun over the weekend that Shamie Heffernan would no longer be an official part of the Ballydoyle setup. But there were some quite interesting developments yesterday, again in the same interview from Aidan O'Brien, and quite a significant strike for someone who might just be sliding into Heffernan's shoes already.
Yes, indeed. Declan McDonough rode brilliant to success, and Aidan was effusive in his praise about how well he rode her. He often is with whoever rides a winner for him. It was a very good ride, by the way, I think. I think the way he got her to settle, picked up and timed his challenge in desperate ground was excellent. But you also refer to the fact, obviously, Shamie Heffernan no longer part of the Ballydoyle setup. Obviously, the cynics out there may have suggested that there was a fallout. Aidan O'Brien and Shamie Heffernan have both been quick to dispel that there's any fallout. And it was simply a case of Shamie Heffernan wanting to do something different this season. Aidan has suggested again in that interview that there will be opportunities if Shamie is available for Aidan to use him during the season, but felt that having been part of the squad for, you know, almost three decades, it was not an unreasonable request or suggestion to try something new in 2024. Obviously, they enjoyed some great days, Irish Derbies, the Derby, Breeders' Cup winners. But Shamie Heffernan has been around a long time doing the same thing, doing something different at his stage of his career, not unreasonable.
Yeah, I thought Aidan gave the clue really in the interview where he said, you know, Shamie's been in here 6 days a week for nearly three decades. And I think that although it had a clearly massive upside with the rides he was given and no doubt the significant living that he's amassed for himself and his family, that's a lot. 6 days a week for 30 years. That at some point you're going to say, do you know what? There's got to be a more varied and interesting way of passing my time, however brilliant this has been.
I think Aidan added the phrase "the outside world." Yeah. try something different from the outside. Yeah,
I know. You wondered how closely that struck a chord with him. Yeah. Internally, don't you?
I'm certain if anybody watches back the interview, when he says it, even he has a little smirky smile.
It's not even that little, the smile, either.
He's quite well aware how intense it is. You know, I'm sure you've spoken to him on occasions, Nick. I certainly have, when he speaks about how he enjoys it, but it's a routine that he knows so well, and he does a lot of, obviously, it's been his life for however long. When you ever ask him about doing things outside of it, I don't think he's that hugely interested in extracurricular activities. He just wants to do the job. very intense in that sense.
Now, someone who is interested in extracurricular activities of an extremely interesting nature as well is Nina Carberry, a trailblazer, brilliant rider, multiple Cheltenham Festival winner, Dancing with the Stars champion in Ireland, Rishi, and now...
And now Nina Carberry is entering the world of politics. Nina Carberry is going to run as a candidate for Fine Gael in the European elections this coming summer. Obviously, she's played quite a significant role in a lot of our lives as a rider for many years, multiple winner at the Cheltenham Festival. I think she's had 7 winners at the Cheltenham Festival over the years. And she's also won Dancing with the Stars in Ireland. But now she wants to go into politics. And it's quite reassuring, in a sense, to hear why she wants to go into politics, Nick. Of anyone who's picked up the paper today and had a look at why she wants to do it, talking about trying to make a difference for rural communities, trying to make a difference for farmers and small businesses. And obviously, someone with her background, her experience, her hands-on experience, bringing that particular angle to politics and to her party, I think it's a great vocation for her if that's where she's going to end up. A terrific thing for someone like her in racing to step out of it and do something that's far more important than what we sometimes think is.
Now, I had a chat with Nina last night, and we're going to have a chat a little bit later in the week. But she said, I've got to get through Wednesday, I think it is, first, because she's got to be rubber stamped and officially voted in as one of the candidates this week. So although that appears to be quite likely from my perspective, she wasn't going to tempt fate and felt that later in the week would be better time for a catch up. But it was a really interesting conversation, and she clearly is quite passionate. And I think if the world was full of people who were entering politics for the reasons that she is, then we would be in a rather better place necessarily than we are. And I've no doubt that we'll be talking quite a bit more about what goes on in Parliament between now and the end of the week on this side of the RHC. Continuing a look ahead to what's coming up, Rishi, you and I will both be in Dubai next week. How is that Dubai World Cup night shaping up in terms of international stars, stars of renown, horses people will have heard of?
Oh, I think it's really shaping up to be a very, very good night, Nick. Looking at the Dubai World Cup itself, obviously, Senior Buscador is heading to the Dubai World Cup after winning in Saudi. The defending champion from Japan, Ushba Tesoro, is going to line up. One of the most intriguing, obviously, Derma Sotogaki, who won the UAE Derby and ran so well in Saudi and indeed in America, the Breeders' Cup. He's heading to the Dubai World Cup. One of the most intriguing runners of the whole night is the horse from Kazakhstan, and that, of course, is Kabir Khan, who started off his career at Almaty Racecourse. The pictures that World Horse Racing have shown of that race still remain quite extraordinary from where he's come and where he's going to. And he's got a chance in the World Cup itself. John Gosden's going to take a team, including the history-seeking Lord North, who will try and become the first horse ever to win 4 times on Dubai World Cup night. Speaking of Aidan O'Brien, Auguste Rodin's heading out there for the Shima Classic, where he'll face what seemingly be obviously strong Japanese contenders, as well as Rebel's Romance, who was back to winning ways for Charlie Appleby recently. Sibelius, the winner of the Golden Shaheen, he's back to defend his crown. Dania, who won the Al Khoz, he's back to defend his crown. It's bubbling up to be a very good night of racing.
One person we will not see in Dubai, by the looks of it, is James Doyle, who has been notable by his absence at some of the big international meetings, particularly given his retainer now with Wathnan Racing. He's not been in Qatar or Saudi Arabia. He, I think, got an injury, off games injury, if you like, an injury that had nothing to do with his race riding career. I was told by his employers at Wathnan that he's back riding out and he will be back race riding in the next few weeks, which is reasonably vague.
It's strange that we haven't heard much. Well, I haven't. Maybe I've missed it, but haven't heard much more of this, particularly given the fact, obviously, that the flat season is almost upon us. The season, as you mentioned, in Qatar and Dubai, for example. You know, there was no part that James played out there, as he has done for many a year. He's obviously also joined Roger Varian, or has agreed to join Roger Varian, but I'm not sure that he's played much of a part there as yet as well. So an interesting time of the season. I can't imagine if James Dorn was going to be off games for much longer that we wouldn't know about it. But it's quite interesting that it hasn't. I mean, I'd like to know more about why he's been off the track and not confirmation as to how quickly he'll be back.
I'm sure spring was in the air yesterday. I'm slightly less clear that it is today. But if I talk to Jimmy George, marketing director from Tattersalls, about the Craven Breeze Up sale, it will certainly, I think, make us believe that something nicer is around the corner. And hope for the future and renewal of the great sport, which is what this time of year and flat racing is all about. So, Jimmy, what can you promise us this time round?
Morning, Nick. Yes, as you say, very exciting time of year. It feels like the flat season, to a degree, got going yesterday with the meeting at the Curra. And spring is in the air and the Tattersalls Craven Breeze Up sale is about 4 weeks away. It takes place from the 15th to the 17th of April. We've got 182-year-olds catalogued, a very high-class team. And as everybody knows, this is a very, very good sale indeed. It's produced the highest rated two-year-old in Britain in two of the last 3 years. That's this spectacular Van Dijk, unbeaten Group 1 winner, dual Group 1 winner last year, and a couple of years ago, Native Trail, who ended his two-year-old career as an unbeaten dual Group 1 winner as well, before going on to Classic Glory. So it's really a sale that is producing star performers on an annual basis, and I think it's important to remember that the same year that Native Trail won the Tattersalls Irish 2000 guineas, Cachet, who was bought at the same Breeze Up sale as him for 60,000 guineas, won the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket. So these are no flashes in the pan at the moment.
Van Dijk, Native Trail, Cachet, three wonderful horses. Where are the good ones likely to come from this time round, do you think, just on a quick scan of that catalogue?
Well, as I say, we've got 180 very smart two-year-olds catalogued. I think it's notable that nine of the top 10 stallions in last year's leading sires list have two-year-olds catalogued, including the final Galileo two-year-old ever to be sold at public auction. But also we've got two-year-olds by Frankel, Dark Angel, See the Stars, Kingman, La Vida Vega, etc., etc. In addition to that, you have some of the well-established sires of two-year-olds, including, obviously, the shooting star of them all, probably Havana Gray, who has 14 two-year-olds catalogued in the Craven sale this coming year. And Blue Point, who was leading first-season sire last year, has 15. So for those with their eyes on two-year-olds in particular, they're very well catered for. And obviously they stand a very good chance of winning the £250,000 Tattersalls Craven Royal Ascot mm-hmm. Group 1 bonus, which has been won in two of the last 3 years by the aforementioned Van Dijk and Native Trail. So there's an awful lot to excite the potential buyers this year.
Jimmy George there. The catalogue for the Craven Breeze Up sale is available at tattersalls.com. The sale times, the Breeze takes place from 9:30 on Monday, the 15th of April. So you can see these horses gallop on Newmarket's Rowley Mile, and that is open to all. And then the sale, 5:45, Tuesday the 16th and Wednesday the 17th of April, after racing at the Craven meeting. Quite an possibly the most important piece of news yesterday. It's one that might not excite people initially, but when they read it, it probably should do. Concerns some legislation that has been passed surrounding the ability of immigrant workers to play their part in the racing industry in Britain. What's happened here?
So a while back, Nick, the government issued a decree that in order for industries in the UK to attract or recruit people from abroad, there'd be a points-based system to bring them over to the UK to see whether or not they'd be eligible to qualify. And also, it would also, they would have to be on a minimum salary of £38,700. Now, that was quite a significant blow to the racing industry, who have a massive shortfall. And when we speak to trainers, anybody who has to deal with stable staff numbers, and studs as well, breeding operations, there is a huge shortfall in the number of people that are required to work and the number of people who are currently working. Somewhere estimating the region of 2,000, which is a significant amount. However, news emerged yesterday that the BHA have been working along with the government to come up with a solution to that. The threshold for the salary has been reduced from 38,700 to 30,960. And the government have added six racing-related roles to the new immigration salary list. And those six racing roles are racing grooms, work riders, stallion handlers, stud grooms, stud hands, and stud handlers. As I said, there is a points-based system in order for them to qualify, including simple things like being able to speak English to a decent level of ability, which at least gives some congruence to the reasons for them coming over to work. But I think that this is very good news for the industry. I think it's been obviously very welcomed by the National Trainers Federation and the TBA. And it actually gives us a bit of a chance to fill the hole. I think a lot of people are aware it's not a long-term solution for the industry, but it at least allows the industry to plug a very, very big gap.
All right. Well, what difference will this make on the ground? Let's talk to Ed Harper from Whitsbury Manor Stud. Ed, presumably this ruling is good news for you. Just explain to me why and how difficult the situation has become.
Yeah, I almost jumped for joy when I saw the tweet from the TBA that these roles have been added to the ISL. You know, three of these roles are specific to the stud industry. So this isn't sort of some watered down, we might be able to sneak them in. This is actually specific to us and our industry. So the three roles for us, the stallion handlers, the stud grooms and the stud hands, you know, those are the roles that we have a massive shortfall of in this industry, in Britain in particular. I mean, the less said about Brexit, the better. I won't go into that. But, you know, the industry is struggling to look after the number of animals it has in the best possible way that we should be doing. And that is simply because a lack of experienced people to do the job. You know, when I'm speaking to breeders in this country, the most common reason they give us for stopping or reducing the size of their business is not a lack of interest, it's not a lack of desire or a lack of wanting to invest in the industry. It is not being able to replace the person they've relied upon for the last 20, 30 years. A typical case where the general person that sort of mows the lawn, drives the tractor and looks after the mares has reached retirement age, and they can't find someone to replace them. And that's very sad when the desire is there to keep going. And we have clients that just can't because the bodies aren't there to employ them.
Well, this is excellent news that this might significantly help you and help you at a time when your stud is flourishing and burgeoning. And more good news yesterday for Whitsbury Manor. Really something that everybody wants. First season sire strikes at the Curragh with first runner Sergei Prokofiev. Now, there's been a lot of talk about him, but you know better than anybody else, they have to go and get it done.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely fantastic. You know, in the middle of a hard season when everyone's got their heads down on the stud busying away, there's not a better morale boost for the team here than watching a race over lunch and all screaming at the TV. I mean, it's a funny business, as you know, that this race is not going to be remembered come the October yearling sales, most likely, but it couldn't be a better start. And, you know, it's what stallion people dream about. The first winners looks like he's pretty decent. And no, congratulations to Ammo and Robson and Adrian Murray and the team that did that, because, he was a lovely looking horse. We actually sold our yearlings at Doncaster opposite Flash Conroy of Glenvale, and he was in their consignment, and he was a beautiful looking colt with a huge stride, a big horse, and I thought, well, what a lovely horse, but we're not going to be seeing him till September, so for him to go and win in March is incredible.
And there is a certain Jim Bolger who will remind you that he's had quite good horses win the first two-year-old race of the season.
We try not to get too ahead of ourselves. That would be nice if they were half as good as them or Buccaneer or Ferte, but no, it's brilliant. You know, we've had a lot of support with Sergei Prokofiev in the last few years. You know, there are certain sort of key stallions every year that sort of hold the hopes of commercial breeders in Britain every year. And he is one of them because he's been affordably priced for the last 4 years and a lot of people have used him. You know, he's one that can really keep the ship sailing for small breeders. So yes, for our own sake, we want him to do well, but also to keep small breeders heading in the right direction.
Ed Harper there from Whitbury Manor, stud not only on the success yesterday for his first season sire, Sergei Prokofiev, but also on that legislation that could prove all important for studs and stables. Right, I have deliberately avoided lots and lots more post-Cheltenham debrief today because I think everyone's probably had their fill of it. But I am going to give you, Rishi, a free hit here. A free constructive hit, if you like, for the week in terms of things you enjoyed and didn't enjoy and so forth.
Okay. Things that I enjoyed, Nick, and it remains the same every year. I enjoy the good horses, and albeit it's in slightly different circumstances now, I enjoyed seeing the likes of Ballyburn and Galopin des Champs. No matter what people say, good horses still excite me and still make every day that you work in the sport of horse racing worthwhile. And I know it sounds a little bit romantic or whatever, but I loved it. I love seeing all the good horses at Cheltenham. There's one horse in particular I cannot wait to see what he does next season, and that's Factophile. I think he's out of the very top draw. I've watched that Brand Advisory back a couple of times and I think he is something special. So that was the exciting part about the Cheltenham Festival. What I didn't enjoy at the Cheltenham Festival is that I didn't enjoy the fact that so many people came to the sport. Say, for example, those people who came racing to Cheltenham actually physically visited the race course and went away with a bad experience. I think it's adamant that whoever we are, the jockey club, whoever is hosting people on a race course, I think it's imperative that they try to put themselves in the shoes of a race goer, you know, whether it's man, woman or child, the elderly, disabled, whatever. Put them in the shoes of a race goer and what their experiences are, were, will be, and understand what they want out of a race day, what the fact that they want to be comfortable, they want to have everything easily done on a race day. And I don't think that happened at the Cheltenham Festival entirely. And that was what I felt as a racing person, as someone who works in a sport, who loves it. I felt that was awkward, especially the day that everyone was stuck in the mud. So many people were stuck in the mud as well. Those were the two things that overriding for me, I felt at this year's festival.
All right, Tuesday, Timeform Perspective with Dan Barber. Dan, we have chewed and chewed some more over this Cheltenham Festival. So now it is well masticated. I will just say it carefully. I will just let you put the finishing touches. In brisk and breezy fashion.
Yeah, we could do some theme tune music here. I know we've sort of alienated a lot of people with our niche 90s British light entertainment references, but we could do with that countdown that used to get on the top 100 on Radio 1 back in the day, some theme tune music for the top 5 in Timeform ratings at the latest Cheltenham Festival. Reading upwards... Equal Fourth, State Man and Captain Guinness both ran to 164. Gaelic Warrior cleared the leading novice. He was 167 in obliterating the Arkle Field. Protectorat won the Ryanair, of course, on the Thursday. He was really good. He was 168 and then clear of the pack. Kel Surprise, Galopin des Champs on 175. But there's been an awful lot of talk, hasn't there, about a declining quality, and we must accept the number of names that were missing, a couple of whom will feature in this next list. This is just for comparison historically, small sample size and all, but going back to last year, that rating of 164 that Stateman and Captain Guinness achieved, that was enough for them to be equal fourth in the highest ratings of this year. There were 10 horses who ran to 164 plus at last year's festival alone. The top rated was Galopanda Champs, who was 179, but there were three or four horses alone in the Gold Cup that topped the rating that the fourth equal fourth clock this year, Nick. So if you want some numbers to back up the belief and the gossip, certainly, that this was a down year for the festival, and the caveat of horses not being well enough to run or whatever, you've got one there. Basically, twice as many horses ran to high ratings last year as they did this.
All right, Dan. Today we are celebrating horses that aren't necessarily those who win races at the Cheltenham Festival, but are horses that have given us their all over season after season after season, one of whom is a Cheltenham Festival winner.
Indeed, yeah, remarkable. This was prompted by the news that Cyclop, a horse who I've seen so much on the Northern Circuit, his career has now come to an end, all in one piece, which is great, obviously. I posited last year that he, of those currently in training, he might be the one that on the racetrack has covered most ground. And this might be a bit alien some of the listeners in the US, etc., where races are a dash is over 5 furlongs to a mile and a half. Some of these horses are covering 3.5 miles fairly regularly in races and having to negotiate 20-plus obstacles. So it's a remarkable feat for some of these. I mean, there are only 600 or so this century who have covered more than 1,000 furlongs. And top of the shop is a Cheltenham Festival winner. Go back to a new story. He covered 2,372 furlongs in his 99 completed races. Just to make it a bit... It is absolutely crazy. I mean, we took out falls and non-completions generally just because really our R&D team didn't have a lot on last week, obviously. It was only Cheltenham, but we couldn't really have them adding up how far a horse covered prior to falling at the fourth last or pulling up on the home turn. So we've removed all those. A new story's top. He was a Cheltenham Festival winner of the cross-country chase. He went back twice more and finished placed in it. Probably the shortest price of the week, a similar price to Willie Mullins trainer winner at the Cheltenham Festival would be that Michael Chapman might have a few in there. He's got three in the top 10. But a couple of names further down that I really liked. Two horses from the same stable, Peter Pritchard, in 28 and 29. Here Comes the Dream and Tis Free to Dream. One ran 72 times, one ran 75. And when they called time on their careers, they'd covered only 2.5 furlongs difference across those 147 races. I thought that was great. Cyclop back in the 170s doesn't take anything away from him. Not even the highest in his stable that goes to Flying Verse. But just such a fun list this, isn't it, Nick? And if any of your listeners are similarly minded, I'm sure we might be able to distribute it somehow.
All right, Dan, finally, the BHA handicapper has dished out his hikes for Cheltenham. Langadam plus 10. So up to 150. Is that enough to stop him?
I suppose a lot depends on what happens between now and then. He probably is a bona fide 150 horse, isn't he? There was a lot of talk about the amount he'd come down. You and I on Racing TV were chatting about it. We've got him 148 now. The handicap wasn't dropping him in chunks. And fundamentally, if he'd have run off 147, he'd have been very close to winning anyway, given how decisively he came clear in that Coral Cup. I'm sure the process will begin now to some extent of looking forward to the next Cheltenham Festival, or do they crack on at Aintree now that they've had this second successive Cheltenham win? But yeah, he's got himself into lore, hasn't he, as this Cheltenham Festival handicapper for the ages, putting him alongside the likes of Buena Vista, horses that might not have done much between the festivals, but on the big day, they were primed to run big ones.
Indeed. And the ultimate, Quavega, really, although she just didn't have any runs in between times. That was the Time Porn perspective, and those are questions that I've been putting to Langadan's trainer, Dan Skelton. This is what he's got to say about what might be next. Yeah.
Well, obviously, you want to try and go to Aintree with him. You'll get entries in the handicaps and the grade ones. Obviously, on a flat track like Aintree, you're never afraid to step up to 3 miles with him. But, you know, I've always wanted to try and make him into a graded horse, but his form in the autumn and the winter has never given us the opportunity to arrive into the spring with, like, a genuine top-level contender.
because he's just so hard to train in the winter. And like I've made, you know, every year I've made a point of that. This year was even worse than ever. He bled on one occasion and we had to treat him for ulcers. So, I mean, yeah, I'd love to make him into a graded horse. Who, you know, who wouldn't want to have, you know, a genuine top level contender? And yeah, answer to your question, what goes on next year? Well, we've got to see. I mean, if he goes to Aintree, lines up against all the grade one horses and is put in his place, that will, you know, that will confirm that he's a handicapper. If he can go there in good form and compete with them, well, you know, we'd be delighted with that because we'd love to try and step up, basically.
So could you, I mean, given how difficult you say he is in the winter, and given that he seems to run very well every time you get him to Cheltenham, could you just not do the old Quivega with him and just lay him away for pretty much the whole season and produce him the way you did the other day? Because the form he was in, he absolutely hosed up. I mean, to be honest, do I think he'd have won with another 7 or 8 pounds on his back? Probably.
Yeah, I was genuinely surprised how well he won. I thought the last 3 weeks, like I'd explained in these previews and build-ups and everything else, I'd said the last 3 weeks have started to look a lot more like it. But I didn't expect him to win like that, if he was going to win at all, because, you know, I thought, how can you think he's going to do better than win the Coral Cup the year before? It was remarkable that he won it with more authority this year, to be honest. I don't know where it came from. He had a surgery after last year's festival, and like I said, he's impossible to train in the winter. So I wouldn't say that I thought our best days were behind us, but it wouldn't have surprised me if they were. But, you know, to find that they're actually not is testament to the horse, really. You've got to give the horse credit. But I suppose you could wrap him up and just, you know, do that. But it requires a lot of belief. And, you know, I like to run the horses. You know, I do. I'm not afraid to say that, you know, I'm one of those people that does run them. So, you know, I'm probably led down the road that we've taken by him rather than just dictating it to him, you know, right, we're going down the graded route now, because, like I say, I probably just like to run the horses. Don't think that we're just, oh, you know, handicaps, handicaps, handicaps. These horses, any horse, if it can step out of handicap company, we very much welcome and promote that. But we want to have them in the graded races if we can.
So he could easily run in a grade one at Aintree.
I'd love to run him in the grade one Aintree.
All right, it's time for the weekly review from the point-to-point scene, brought to you by Thoroughbred's point-to-rules bonus, which dangles a £5,000 carrot for any points sold through Thoroughbred that goes on to win on debut under rules. And quite a few contenders for that coming up in the Thoroughbred sale this week, more of which in a few moments' time. But Ben Atkins from Pointing Pointers podcast, there is only one place to start. With Sine Nomine, the kind of result of the Hunter's Chase at Cheltenham that keeps hope alive that pointer pointing is not extinct in Great Britain, Ben, that must have been a big source of comfort to everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Fantastic race to watch. Incredible result. Me and Sam went to Hutton Rugby on Saturday, and the buzz around the place was unreal. Fiona Needham was there with the trophy, and we were setting up our little pitch and heard this huge roar go up and realised that John Dawson had walked into the sponsors' tent to a rapturous ovation. And look, a really, really feel-good story. And yeah, a great result.
And in terms of what the future might hold for this mare, what do you believe that they will do with her? Do you think it'll just be wash, rinse, repeat? Or do you think Fiona's tempted to do a Caroline Bailey and try and put this horse under rules proper and do a sort of Teton Mill, Castle Maine style campaign?
Well, I think she said on Sunday on your programme that she might look to run her again this season. But, you know, personally, I'd love to see her just try and repeat the feat next year. The mare clearly shows a liking for the track. And it'd be nice to keep her, you know, as a proper pointer in inverted commas and competing in these championship races at the festival. But yeah, whatever she does, it's a huge credit to the trainer. And you know, some people would say it was a fantastic ride. I'm personally one of those people. Some people would say she never should have gone up the inner anyway, but as we've been saying for a long time on our podcast and on this segment, John Dawson is a great advertisement for British amateurs riding in England.
I'm not quite sure what to infer from that. I can't work out whether you thought it was a good ride or a bad one.
I thought it was a great ride. I loved the fact he switched round two horses to come with a great jump at the last and get up. But you know, there's definitely people that say he shouldn't, probably including himself and Fiona, that say he probably shouldn't have been down the inner anyway. But look, you know, all's well that ends well, Nick, eh?
Yeah, and when you say great jump, I mean it was a great effort from the mare, I thought, to get it to jump it without losing as much momentum as she might have done. Pretty though it definitely was not, but brilliant result for Fiona Needham and John Dawson and Sine Nomine. Congratulations all round. Now, thoroughbred sale this week, and you've been on the road trying to find out a little bit more about some of these British pointers that are headed there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got around four individual trainers who are taking their chance with a thoroughbred sale tomorrow. Four different horses with four different stories, and we can hear from them now.
Yep, first up we'll hear from Chris Barber about Dancing in the Moonlight.
She's a big scopy mare by Yorton's stallion, Pethers Moon. I actually bought her as a two-year-old from their sale. She was recommended by Lester Futter. And she's taken everything in her stride. She's been very, very straightforward. And she's 100% GBB. And then also going through the sale, they have that very good initiative of the point to rules bonus. So theoretically, if she did go in and win a mare's bumper in a couple of weeks, you could be looking at getting 15 grand back through the GBB and the thoroughbred bonus. She should have won. She was far too green in front. And got past and then sort of got going again and was going hard at the line just to be denied. But she's a very, very nice mare, and Pethers Moon seems to be getting a few winners now recently. So hopefully she's one for the future.
Josh Newman. Go Johnny Go won Division 1 of the Young Horse Flat Race at Millbourne St Andrews at the weekend. Josh, you did the steering, and I wondered if you could give us a bit of an impression of what you think he may be capable of.
Hi Ben, great to get his head in front. Obviously his first run, and it was our first four-year-old runner of the season, so hopefully the rest can continue. But going back to him, he's not over big, but he's a good little tough chap, and he'll make a cracking little hurdler, I'd say, for going under rules. He jumps very well. We've done a lot of schooling with him. We just, from a long way out, planned to go down the bumper route because he was just tough. He took all his work, but his jumping will be the making of him going forward. Yeah, I'd like to say it'd be tough and do a good job for someone.
Max Comley. Two Become One is a gorgeous looking individual who you're selling tomorrow on Thoroughbred. Max, she came third on debut and looks a nice type for the future. Could you tell us a little bit more about her, please?
Hi Ben. Yes, Two Become One, she's a lovely horse, very straightforward. She's a very good mover. She's a lovely looking horse, standing about 16.2. She's got a very good pedigree with black type that runs the whole way through. She looks a really exciting prospect for the future. She finished third on debut when trained by Chris Barber. She's only beaten about three lengths, jumped very well, and showed a great attitude towards racing. Obviously she's eligible for the £5,000 point to rules bonus which Thoroughbred put on. She's got a clean vet certificate, and someone will be very lucky to have her. So we'll look forward to following her in the future.
And finally, Callum, you're selling Cresswell Oak, who ran perhaps a lot better than the bear result would suggest at Chattersley Corbett recently, and I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about his prospects going forward.
Hi Ben. Cresswell Oak, yes, you mentioned the race in Chattersley last April. He was leading that day easily until missing a marker, three out. Looked to be travelling strong and doing everything right until then. It was just one of those things, luck was not on our side. We turned him out after that run because the ground had gone too firm for the rest of the season for him. After the break came in looking well and strong. Since then he's been back in full training. He's straightforward, built like a chaser, being a nice stamp by telescope. So there doesn't seem to be any reason why he wouldn't show a performance again like that day in Chadsley. Just if only luck was on our side.
Excellent stuff there from Ben, and good luck to all of those selling their British point-to-pointers in the Thoroughbred sale for the £5,000 point-to-rules bonus. Well, it is Tuesday, so we go around the bloodstock world with our friends at Weatherby's, their excellent stallion book, and of course their electronic stallion guide. And don't forget all their National Hunt stallions, nhstallions.co.uk. And of course, that's particularly relevant now in the aftermath of the Cheltenham Festival. And much as we make plenty of the need for diversity in the breed, and much as we make plenty of the fact there were so many different stallions represented, Nicolas de Chambour of Arad Etrahan will be very, very pleased with his haul from last week, because it was headed by the progeny of Sandy Sam, Montmiral, Protectorat, Sine Nomine, all by that stallion. Gentleman to Me, second in the champion chase as well. His stud also stands Mars Marvel, the sire of Stayers Hurdle winner Chupo, and did stand the wonderful Polyglot before his death at the age of 26, who is the sire of Fact to File. So, Nicolas, for all it was well spread, quite a lot of it was spread in your direction. How did you enjoy last week?
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, we always enjoyed the whole week, you know, watching, you know, the great racing. And obviously when your stallion are doing well, it adds, a lot more to the week. And it was nice to see, you know, Saint-Dessin, he's had winner before at Cheltenham. He's 26 now, as you mentioned. But, you know, he keeps getting those good horses, and I'm sure he will, in the next few years, also. But it was very satisfactory to see Tea Hupo, winning his grade one, his group one at Cheltenham. He's been third before, and he's only from the second generation of Mask Marvel. It was great to see, and he's gonna keep helping him in the future.
Sunday Sun will be a horse that fascinates people, because he's been at the top of the tree or near the top of the tree for a long, long time now. And as you say, he's still going at the age of 26. Tell me a little bit about his backstory and how he burst onto the scene as a stallion.
Well, the funny thing is, he was the very first National Hunt stallion that we retired at Etraham. It was back then. It was my uncle who was running the farm, and we had Frank Champion on board for a few years already, and he was always passionate by the National Hunt scene. He was our nomination manager at the time, and Saint-Dessin, they kept him as a colt. He was owned by Jacques Détré and Nicolas de Lagenette, prominent owner breeders in France, and he was a very good racehorse in Auteuil over jump, and he was on the market, and we felt he was a very interesting horse for us to try to diversify a little bit, you know, from the flat. And we did manage to buy him at the time, and it was the first of a long story now, and we've been happy doing that. It's been successful, and it's been a great diversification for us, and luckily he's been a very good stallion, and I think him and Cap Guard and a couple of others have really sort of boosted the appetite, for that French breeder have for those jumpers, you know, that can then retire as stallion, and they really sort of they're a good example of the diversity that we have in France. And you know, last week between Mask Marlowe, the son of Monge, who's a Saint Léger winner, and Saint Destin being a typical jumper from France, show that those, you know, the two extreme work in France, and we need that diversity.
I think one of the most interesting things about French National Hunt breeding, and we see it a little bit in England and Ireland, but really it's the preserve of the French, and sometimes we get these stallions, ones that have actually jumped themselves. And you now got a son of Saint-Dessin at stud who was a very good jumper himself. Tell me a little bit about why you think this can work in France, and why it doesn't necessarily sell to British and Irish unless the stallion has already proven.
I've kept asking, you know, my Irish friend, you know, why they didn't purchase that particular son of Saint-Dessin, Goliath du Berlay, that we bought, because I felt it was the perfect horse for them to try something a bit different from that sire line. And they all said that they were all going to be too slow, and they keep needing to bring, you know, speed to the National Hunt families, and they were afraid that with a horse like him, or with a horse from, you know, that I would have won over jumping in Auteuil, the progeny would be too slow for Irish and English jump races, which could be the case, I don't know. But what works in France, I think, is the fact that we are not, it's not only one, you know, sire line or one type of horses that we have. I think we keep retiring a mix of flat stallion and jumpers, and the breeders are very aware of those difference, and they're very aware of their own families and what they need. I have a great respect for the, you know, for the French National Hand Breeder. I think they do a really good job. They've been very good at selecting, you know, those families and those mares. I think France Gallo, by keeping a very tight numbers in the stake races, also of a jump, and doing the opposite at what the English and the Irish have done, have really helped the selection of the mares and the quality of the brood mare barn in France. And this, you know, and the breeders working really closely with the stallion farm, and on agreeing what we all need to produce good horses, have helped us, you know, reaching that point.
I won't let you go, Nicolas, without asking you about the vibes you're getting for the first season sires that are about to have their 2-year-olds from your flat operation, Hello Yumzen and Persian King. Any nice ones that you know of lurking around that are going to run soon?
It's pretty early in the season, so I couldn't name, you know, a particular one that would run in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But we've been having really good report from trainers and pinukers about both of them. There'll be a good group at the Craven in Tattersall. There'll be 8 Hello Yumzane. So I feel it's showing that they're showing, you know, enough precocity to go there. So I felt it was a really good sign. And the Persian King are probably surprising, you know, a lot of the people by showing, you know, a bit more speed, a bit more sort of natural precocity. So they, you know, they shouldn't be too far off the Hello Yumzane, when they, you know, we'll see them on the track pretty soon as well, I think.
Thanks to Nicolas de Chambour there from Arad Etraham. Thanks also to Dan Barber, Ben Atkins, Dan Skelton, Jimmy George, Kelly Burke, and all my guests today, including, of course, Rishi Prasad, who has a tip for you for this afternoon.
I'm going to throw one at you from the Sue Smith stable running at Wetherby today. First time over 3 miles, Serendipity has run twice at Wetherby, both times run really well, once over hurdles, once over fences. I've always thought he wants a trip. Well, if he won over 2 miles at Wetherby earlier in the season, but we'll find out today in the 3:45.
Rishi, thanks so much for your time today. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you once again tomorrow. That was Tuesday, March the 19th. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.